Welcome to the ninth stream of .NET Final Fantasy Podcast.
Horrible Asian stereotypes.
I didn't know we had Nomura as our host.
So this is the first Final Fantasy podcast from the livestream.net. I'm Pixel. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
This is Tenyo.
This is Ryu.
This is Vivek. I think Ryu and Forrest.
Yeah, Ryu and Forrest kind of went at the same time.
I thought that I heard that.
We're basically going to be bringing you the latest news and our thoughts on it and shit that's been going down in the fandom.
Yeah, the livestream.net is your premium source of Final Fantasy information. We concentrate mainly on Final Fantasy VII, but we also cover other Final Fantasies. We have exclusive translations, lots of great projects in the works. So definitely check us out and go on the forums. We have a really nice community. So yeah, join us for the reunion.
I like it.
So we'll start off with the news here. The first big piece of news from this week, Yoichi Wada is stepping down as president of Square Enix, and there'll be major restructuring of the staff ahead, apparently. What do you guys think of this?
There was much rejoicing.
Yeah, it was kind of long.
And the peasants rejoiced.
Yeah.
I don't know if I really have an opinion on it. I mean, was he really the one who was all to blame for everything that people are pissed at Square for nowadays? Or
not? Well, I mean, not directly, but it was his money is the bottom line sort of thing that led to a lot of really shitty decisions that have really sort of, you know, screwed over the company recently. So
also just said a lot of stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Even if he wasn't responsible for anything happening.
Well, I'm not going to deny that he hasn't, like, said stuff that's really dumb, like how they want to target Western gamers, but then, boo-hoo, Western gamers just don't understand us. But, you know.
Oh.
I'm not saying that he hasn't said dumb things, but I'm all like, can one guy really be the cause of all the problems of the company?
Yeah.
No, of course not. But, I mean, as the president, I guess he's kind of the figurehead. And if
that's
things
true.
Aren't going well in your company, it looks better to get rid of the big man, you know?
That's they held
true.
Him a lot longer than most companies seem to. Most companies, the first kind of sign of trouble, like, fire CEO! I was surprised they held on to him as long as they did.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a big thing in Japanese culture. It's kind of, you know, he hasn't been fired, you know. That's, I think in Japan, being fired is a really big thing compared to over here.
In front of a train event.
Yeah. So he's, I think the same kind of thing happened to Sakaguchi. He was kind of demoted and kept in the company until he decided he was being creatively strangled. So he decided to leave and go on and do whatever. But I think that's probably what will happen to Wada.
I saw an interesting kind of article. I have no idea where it was. Where is someone... a former developer from Square defending Wada or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if any of you guys saw it, and it was about, the guy was defending him basically, but he said his only flaw was trusting his developers too much, like not giving them deadlines or something,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, that's kind of supported by evidence, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I've never read that. You should find the link.
I'll try and find it. And, person taking his place in the meantime, though, is just another business guy, right?
They're all just business guys.
Has it seen the projections that Square has had for the their upcoming releases, especially the Eidos releases?
No.
Have we? No.
Tell us about them, Ryu.
Yeah, I'm not sure if these are their expected, their projected, or their hopefuls. But either way, they're expecting stuff like, you know, hit the Hitman game to hit, you know, like 3.4 million sales by next year, or like the end of this year, I think. 6 million for Tomb Raider, which maybe, but you
apparently
know.
They weren't too happy about the sales figures of that. I think it's hit like 3 or 4 million now, but. They've spent all this money on Eidos and other subsidiary companies, but
I'm not sure that Eidos have been a pretty brilliant acquisition.
kind of propping up their name.
I mean, hasn't the new Tomb Raider game has like gotten nothing but praise? I haven't heard anybody say that they thought it sucked or anything. So
yeah, and
they'd be happy.
3 million sold is still, you know, three plus million sold. So
yeah, the companies have all been ruined by. I mean, yeah, it's part of the huge budgets that games need, but they have all been ruined by Call of Duty thinking for a game to be considered a success, it's got to sell 6 million units in the first week.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I haven't even played Call of Duty. One of those 6 million was not mine.
I haven't played Call of Duty since the first modern one.
I have not played any
original
four. Call of Duty
game. And I didn't buy it. I was just playing it. Right. But anyway, I found this thing. It's on Kotaku. It was posted last Friday. A Square Enix programmer, wrote a post about him. I don't know any company president who loves playing his own company's games more than Wada. If anything, Wada's mistake, his weakness, was that he loved and cherished his developers so much that he put too much trust in them. That's why the post continued. There were huge projects that needed to be ended or important people that needed to be let go but weren't. So.
I see.
So I guess you just hope the new guy isn't too far the other way. And it's just like, nope, this game's too late. Fire everyone. Cancel it.
Right.
I don't know what games. It's Yusuke Matsuda is taking over, but I don't know what credits he's had. I think he's had a few like Final Fantasy and maybe Vagrant Story credits, but they're not creative ones. I think he's more of a financial guy and business guy.
Yeah, isn't he like... Oh, I think I remember reading somewhere his credentials, and he's been like, the word, I'm blanking on the word, what you are, Force.
A CPA? Accountant?
No, well, like accountant type thing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess ideally you'd want someone who's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Like, you want a business guy who's has an interest in games beyond just the money they make.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you put a pure creative guy like Sakaguchi, you're going to run into this kind of problem Sakaguchi ran into.
Yeah.
But going to business side, you turn into Activision.
Well, there was a recent blog entry on Famatsu's App Corner by the mobile division producer Takahiro Ando. He basically said that Square Enix were going to be ditching the social games that have been brought in recent years to concentrate more on the bigger titles like Final Fantasy and World of Mana instead of sort of cheapening those titles by branching off. I think this is probably part of what is going to be happening over the next few months or the next year or so, sort of taking people out of those sort of satellite production
teams.
Yeah.
How many of these like social media games even came to the United States? I kind of stopped paying attention and didn't play any of them.
There were a few that were on the iOS operating system.
Mm. Yeah, they didn't release any on Android. But
what?
No, I mean it's fine with me. I don't care about mobile games, but still. So I'm more than okay with them dropping it. But I think the bigger problem was them charging so much for them rather than that they were making social games.
Right.
They never quite understood the whole microtransaction thing.
But even things like I haven't played Theat Risen or anything like that, but once they made that, they thought they could just use the art style and stuff and just import it into another little Facebook game or whatever. And I think that's the problem. I think they're just trying to make as much money out of whatever. Even like 13, 13.2, 13.3 or whatever. Like they're...
Well, that was their last... Well, because that was the last console game that made a profit.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I never played 13.2.
I did.
I thought it addressed pretty much every concern with 13. I guess it might have had a little less soul or whatever.
It was polished, but it was at least done with heart. Yeah. Whereas 13 was very, very polished, but it seemed to have been done rigorously rather than enthusiastically.
Yeah, that about sums it up. Because, I mean, it was, you know, not linear. It was, you had more control over your the combat system. There's pretty much anything you heard. There were towns, there were shops, sort of.
Right.
The shops too. There was mini games at the freaking wazoo.
Yeah.
So pretty much just every single thing you heard about 13, they tried to put an answer in for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I liked it. I didn't go crazy over it, but I played my 30 hours and didn't regret it.
I enjoyed it.
I don't know. I like the story. Like, I haven't played it. I just sort of watched the story, and I don't know. I only watched it because I was making the audiobook, but yeah.
Towards the end, Final Fantasy 13 was kind of pissing me off with the battle system. I was like, this isn't even fun. It's just...
Really? That's actually what I like most about
13.
I just feel like I felt like it just... Like, I never wanted to switch characters because I'm all like, this is too much work setting up all my paradigms.
Mm-hmm.
Screw this.
Well, that's
definitely something that needed work.
Right.
And then it's like, I had like half my cast was like overpowered and half my cast couldn't kill anything because...
Well, they all leveled equally in that game. Like,
yeah,
not even...
I never bothered with the Crystariums.
Well, yeah, that's on you.
In 13, did you control each of the characters or... Where they rely on AI.
The main character.
Only the lead one.
Yeah.
Because you could change it, but not in battle. You could, well, it's 13, you could change it whenever you wanted. 13-2, rather. You could change the party leader whenever you wanted.
Which is the first thing that I said about 13's battle system was, I understand we can't micromanage all three of them, but at least give us a frickin' option to switch.
Maybe I just got, like, spoiled by 12, where you can just flip around wherever you wanted, whenever you wanted. But when I was playing 13, I'm like, can I at least switch my party leader? Why is it that I get a game over when my party leader dies?
Yeah.
This is not.
Yeah. I mean, that's, Persona games do that same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say this.
Persona games are more annoying in that because Persona games don't have the retry thing. It was dumb in 13, but it didn't bother me just because it had that battle retry. You can go back to a save point when your party leader died.
Mm-hmm.
You just started the battle over.
Yeah. And Persona is basically sort of a, does the RNG like you? Yes, no. game for a lot of it. So
Persona 3 started to get on my nerves so much with the Hama and Mudo after I ran out of homunculi.
Yeah.
Like 2 hours of training, killed your main character, lost.
Have you guys seen Ni No Kuni?
I played the demo for it. It seems really cute.
It seemed really bizarre.
I heard the demo was a very poor representation of the game.
Yeah.
The demo didn't really interest me, but everyone said that.
Well, I thought it was cool because I'm all about Studio Ghibli, but then I'm all like, I was like, it seems cute, but I don't know if I'll play. But then, I don't know, apparently it seems like it was a pretty good game, so. But it's still like $60 right now, isn't it?
Yeah, so I've heard
it did well critically. Yeah,
but I want to wait for the price to drop at least a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have big problems with the AI, and I don't think any game has really done it properly. Like Final Fantasy XII, you could sort of customize everything, but you know, games like Kingdom Hearts, Ni No Kuni, anything that relies on AI for your party, it never really works, and I hope that's not the way they're going to head into future Final Fantasies. I hope they bring back full control.
Well, I mean, with Kingdom Hearts, it was more of a, here is your player character, oh, and there's also these two guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really considered Goofy and Donald.
Very, very much, you desperately need these two guys to help your player character.
They just use up all your potions, and then they use up all their magic, and then die.
Do that. I mean, there's a couple times where I guess I was getting low on health and like Donald would heal me. But I kind of, you know, Donald and Goofy were mainly there because it was part of the plot. Mm. They were not important. Like you could probably, so I think you can set the game to not have them there and you could probably easily beat the game without them being in battle with you ever. So, because they're just there for the story. Especially because there were battles where they were not there and it's like, I don't miss you.
And pretty much every other game that's not one or two it's just one player character with no backup.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I definitely hope, well, I doubt we're ever going to go all the way back, you know, proper turn-based stuff, because we're way too far in the active time in the tactical battle. And I don't mind that. You know, I actually, like, really like the fact that, you know, it's a bit more action-paced. It's a bit more, you know, where you are matters, how fast you do things matters.
Mm-hmm.
I'd actually like them to make that even more streamlined. Like, queuing up attacks, but also, you know, having the option of when exactly to execute them.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I know a lot of times it just pissed me off in well, 12, 13, and 13-2, when my attack would go off at just not quite exactly the right moment. Like, just a little too soon or a little too late.
That was hugely important in the Lightning DLC for 13-2.
Yeah.
Trying to get stuff right, try to get, like, what's it called, right as his stagger bar ends when he's in the air to slam him to the ground.
Yeah.
Savage or something? Or,
yeah. Scourge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And you have to time the attack so just you hit him right as it runs out, and so you do a whole bunch of damage. But, I mean, 10-2 had you kind of do that, to take us nicely into our next topic.
Yeah.
If you could get your team to attack the same, if you got their attacks to connect at the same time, you'd get combo bonuses.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you could stagger lock people in that game, which was a great thing.
Well, so. Yeah, as I said, 10-2 is the best battle system in the series as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Because it's real fast and all that kind of stuff, but you're still controlling everybody.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's job class switching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of 10-2,
mm-hmm.
the Final Fantasy X Hasty Remaster now includes Final Fantasy X-2.
And they need to better freaking include that tower. I heard they might not do it. They need to include the tower.
They need.
I'm just saying that right now.
All of the international bonus stuff in that remake. And
I know nothing about what.
Just for shits and giggles.
Yeah, I know what 10's international stuff.
Yeah, 10's going to have everything, I do believe, but there's talk about, like, the extra tower part in 10-2 is not going to be there. Why would that not be there? Why? I mean, then people who live in, like, people in Japan, they got the tower. Are they going to be paying for a game that's less than what they had before?
Right. Well, that's the thing with 10, with the original 10. If they didn't make it the international version, Europe would be getting less than what they got the first time.
Exactly. And, you know, like, the tower thing is supposed to have, like, plot stuff about why. I don't want to, like, give away a spoiler, but isn't it supposed to explain why there is a connection between Tidus and Shuyin, or if there actually is one in the tower or something like that?
It goes over it some, but more of it is about, you know, catching up and continuing the story.
Okay, I know nothing about 10-2's international.
Well, I don't know. It still should be there.
Well, yeah, no, I hope so, too.
It definitely should.
And I could play it. I don't know anything about it.
If for no other reason than it gives us extra job classes.
Does it?
Yes. Oh. The Psyker and the Matsuri.
I'm looking forward to playing that game again.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to play 10 again when it came out, but after they announced it and it took 20 years to come out, I ended up replaying 10 anyway because I couldn't wait any longer. But I'll wait for 10-2 now.
What do you think of the graphics that you've seen so far?
I think they look really good.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be really nice.
Yeah.
I think it looks like, you know, the transition between Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, they've changed the way they've textured faces. I think it looks kind of like that. They've learned a lot over the years about...
They figured out how to do hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the laughing scene is going to be just as fake and awkward as ever, because that's the fucking point.
I know, and we'll have to endure another 10 years of people going on and on about it.
Yeah.
Like, yes, the scene annoyed you for, what, 2 minutes? Why do you have to annoy me about it for 10 years?
Yeah. The people hated that scene. I thought it was kind of cute.
Yeah, I agree. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
It was cute.
One of the voice actors I worked with... who does the voice of Reno, he redid that scene and he made it work, and it's not really annoying. It's not like ha 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 ha.
I admit that The laughing seemed a little forced. Maybe that was
well,
the whole
point. That's the point, though. They're forcing themselves to laugh.
That's true.
And then they laugh for real at the end of it.
Yeah.
That's why the people complaining about it, it don't make any sense.
Yeah.
Because they're saying that it's awkward and it's uncomfortable to watch or something. Well, yeah, because it was awkward for them to do that. They weren't happy. They weren't laughing because they had something to laugh about.
But most of Final Fantasy's dialogue is cringeworthy.
Yeah.
It can't all be working designs, man. We cannot all get the perfect storm of localization.
Yeah.
Though I really sort of wish we could. I would love to have seen what the hell they would have done with, like, Final Fantasy XII.
Yeah.
Because it would have been hilarious and awesome.
So, E3 this year. I'm not sure when E3 is. I think it's like in the summer sometime or May. Yeah.
I can never remember when that is. All of a sudden, it just is suddenly happening, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
I think it's May. But have they said when the FF10 HD is coming out yet? Besides this year?
Oh, I think they said summer. I'm not too sure about that actually.
I guess we'll see. Yeah. But we're like Final Fantasy 15 or 25 or.
Yeah, well, apparently there's going to be a new Final Fantasy revealed at E3 this year. Brand director Shinji Hashimoto announced a new Final Fantasy is in development for PlayStation 4, and will likely be unveiled at this year's E3.
What does that job entail? Brand director.
Yeah.
So apparently what he did, making an announcement about
his favorite thing to do.
Yes, it is.
We would like to announce that we're going to announce, that we may announce, that we will announce,
a trailer.
That we won't announce.
That we're thinking about announcing. We're thinking about announcing something, maybe. We'll let you know when we do more thinking.
Please wait a little long. Please enjoy waiting, as the Japanese translation always goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't. Is it going to be 15? Is it going to be Versus turned into 15? Is it just going to be Versus moving on to the PS4?
I hope they turn Agni's Philosophy into a game. That looks, it looks really compelling. I know it was only a tech demo, but I think they've put all that work into.
And we know how much their last tech demo materialized.
Well, it could be in development for the last 10 years.
They should have just done another tech demo of the FF7 opening for PS4.
They should.
Just do it every console generation.
They should have done it.
Until someone burns their office.
Every console.
They should have done it, and they should have released it a couple days ago.
No, what they should have done is with each new console, they have to go back a Final Fantasy. Right. So eventually we'll get this gorgeous, beautiful FF, you know, one, literally just four people walking up to a, you know, a nondescript peasant village intro. Gorgeously rendered, utterly dull. But before that, though, we get to see, you know, a town burning and a couple of kids fighting and dying. And then a bunch of idiots falling into a cave for Final Fantasy III.
Mm-hmm.
Alternately, we would just get Kingdom Hearts again.
Yeah.
There you go. Or it'll be, and everybody will be all over the place. Oh my goodness, they're remaking the first game. Yay. And then they'll, like, be debating it for the next, like, 10 years. Oh, they are going to do it. See, they made this tech demo. They are going to do it. Which, no, they're not really.
I wonder if they will ever make Kingdom Hearts 3. I like that it was the last one, Kingdom Hearts 3D. It was almost like a joke.
did that game even come out?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, it did.
Dream Drop Distance came out.
Mm-hmm. I kind of missed that.
I don't blame you. I kind of have it. I kind of missed it.
You missed it and you own it, but yeah, it just kind of went right by you.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have missed sort of the handheld games. I think that's why they're
Bird
including a lot
was
of that
really
stuff.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, BBS was really damn good on that one.
It really was. If that was the only one, if it went Kingdom Hearts 2 and then Birth by Sleep and then 3, it would have been perfect.
Yeah. Speaking of Kingdom Hearts and it being, well, bringing up it being a Disney game in part, This is slightly out of left field, but I just had a very strange thought. Because LucasArts is being shut down and Disney owns Lucas, what if, and Disney loves working with Square at the moment?
Mm-hmm. Putting Star Wars in the Kingdom Hearts?
Star Wars from Square Enix.
Skybrush 3.
I never made that connection.
I would love to see Eidos take on Star Wars.
Maybe they'll put
Lara Croft in the next Kingdom Hearts game.
I was just thinking of them putting Star Wars in Kingdom Hearts, but that's right, they could just do full-fledged Star Wars games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They've already put Star Wars in Kingdom Hearts. Did you not see the ending of 2?
Happened at the ending of 2 again?
Man says two lightsabers?
Yeah.
Oh, that part. The real anthem. I thought that. I actually kind of thought that was a really dumb.
There's like 7 anthems at this point.
Yeah.
That was the nobody of the guy that was claiming to be anthem.
Just call him Mansex.
Yeah.
Zemnis. His name was Zemnis.
Well, yeah, that's because the nobodies all have their anagram names. But
yep, they're...
with an X.
And then because there was the guy Zaynord or whatever who took the name Ansem, and the villain in Kingdom Hearts 1 was that guy's Heartless, and the villain in Kingdom Hearts 2 was that guy's Nobody, and then the villain in Birth by Sleep was Zaynord.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and Ansem was the guy voiced by Christopher Lee all up in bandages in Kingdom Hearts 2, right?
Yep.
But it's maddening. Like, what?
Yeah, it's kind of convoluted.
I'm Ansem.
And then there's 4 people running around with, you know, Sora's heart and or face.
I was going to say, aren't there like 10 Sora clones by now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like everyone and their grandma's like
the
clone
guy
of Sora.
In Birth by Sleep.
Who's in Birth by Sleep?
Vanitas.
Oh yeah.
Right.
There's like Birth and Birth by Sleep have like 2 Sora clones.
But then Sora's Heartless just looked like the generic little Heartless dudes.
Yep.
Which was cute, I thought.
Right, but it's just because since everyone else who has a strong will or whatever, their Heartless also looks like them.
Yeah.
That's true.
And it's still backwards how the Heartless has your heart and your nobody.
Has your body, yeah.
It's completely ass backwards.
Next time we'll get the Mindless who are really, really just all about your, you know, your memories.
So the next bit of news... Final Fantasy VIII is coming to Steam, which seems like a strange thing since they released 7 on their own servers.
Have they said anything about 8 coming out on Steam, or did people just find the achievements?
Yeah, I think it's just the achievements thing. So it's
honestly, this strikes me as a great plan because 1, Steam is trusted. People will buy shit on Steam that they want anywhere else. Because Steam comes with a guarantee.
Yeah.
Right.
2, the way that Steam does sales, it costs, you know, as long as you can get approval, all it is a cut. They do the hosting, you know, you can do patches. Hell, if they really wanted to, they could, you know, set it up for modders, and that would be, oh God, Final Fantasy mods.
Well, if they do it, they better sort out the music because I hate playing the newer release of Final Fantasy VII because the music is all clinky plonky.
I know. I can't believe they left it as MIDI, like computer run MIDI.
But it's not even nice MIDI. It's like it just doesn't sound right.
Yeah, it sounds like you're running it off, dude. But yeah, has Square officially said anything about that, or is it just the achievements that showed up?
That's all I've seen about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think on that note, we'll take a little musical interlude. This is Blackwing Metamorphosis from Voices of the Livestream album. It's got a load of remixers, Blind, Fishy, Pixie Tricks, 60 Sounds, Stephen Andrews.
Pixie Tricks sing in this one?
Yeah, she does kind of...
This is the remix of Birth of God, right?
No, One Winged Angel.
Oh, sorry. That
yeah.
Makes
more sense. Well, it starts off with sort of a chiptune and then sort of builds up levels of awesomeness. It's just amazing. Yeah. So have a listen to this, and we'll be back with our featured discussions in about 3 minutes.
Okay, done.
And won't they be disappointed when they just get that and not Blackwing anymore?
This has been your musical interlude.
Ta-da!
Welcome back, everybody. This is our...
Discussions, I mean, what direction do you see Future FFs taking? Did we cover that?
No, nope, not yet.
Oh, okay. Go for it. You sound like you have something to say on it, then.
So... I think what with the things that have been said about trying to appeal to the long-term gamers, such as with what they said when they announced that they were going to move away from social games, I think that FF titles are going to not go strictly retro, but I do think they're going to take a look back at, you know, some of their biggest sellers and what made them big sellers, like Final Fantasy IV, which they've released 12 times now.
More times than there are entries in the series.
Yeah. You know, and why people love that, and how to make sort of a modern version of that. And in many ways, that's sort of what they've been doing. It's just sort of, they've been looking at it superficially. You know, like, they took a lot of what worked in 7, in 8, in 9, in 10, in 10.2, and in 12, and they took a lot of the really superficial elements, and they put that into 13. Mm-hmm. And then that didn't work, so then they looked a little deeper, listened to people, and they came out with 13.2, which, again, was not the best game ever, but it was much better, and it felt a lot more like a Final Fantasy game rather than a Final Fantasy movie. And, you know, I mentioned that while it's certainly not Chrono Trigger, it had a Chrono Trigger spirit, and that's where I think they're going to try and go, is to try and capture the spirit or the essence of what has been, you know, some of their better games, mm-hmm. rather than simply trying to copy and paste the elements. Because the only thing that 13.2 has in common with Chrono Trigger is that they are both time travel stories. Mm-hmm. Practically everything else is different, but it's got that essence there of, you know, it's a very sort of lighthearted, too serious romp through time. And that's actually how it goes. It's the, oh shit, something weird's going on with time, but we're having fun with this. Oh mm-hmm. shit, shit's getting real. And that's a great progression to go. And that's basically what it felt like. And granted, yes, it did sort of end with a, oops, you were going to fuck it all up no matter what. But that was just because they knew they were going to have a trilogy at that point.
Mm-hmm. So, do you think Final Fantasy has to be innovative still? I mean,
I think they should try to be innovative, even if they fuck it up.
Mm.
But I do think that Final Fantasy, the first, like, well, actually, no, we have to include not even the numbered series, because all of any game that got labeled as a Final Fantasy, in Japan at least, up until, like, 2000 was them messing with their own system, taking risks, changing the game. You know, we got Final Fantasy, which was, you know, a fairly standard sort of D&D / Ultima knockoff,
mm-hmm.
if we're being perfectly honest with ourselves. The next game was Final Fantasy II, which was so bizarre in how it handled its leveling and, you know, magic growth mechanics. Yeah. And that gave us the entire saga.
It's almost like an Elder Scroll game now.
Yeah. Well, it's a saga game. It was headmastered by the guy who went on to do the entire saga series before that eventually sort of got mired in its own self. And I'd actually love to see them try more saga games, because Saga Frontier and Saga 2 and, well, the first three saga games were just great.
I always wondered why the series never brought back the thing with 2 had with the dialogue, that you could memorize an important word and then, like, try that word on people you talk to and get new stuff out of them.
Well, that was
kind of neat.
It was very neat. Part of the reason why that came out was because that was actually a big thing in Western PC gaming at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those very interesting things, and it's a topic which I really actually, because somebody asked me to, and I really need to get on the subject for an article about the way Eastern and Western RPGs are different, and how they're the same, and how they've been copying over each other. But like I mentioned, Final Fantasy was a D&D Ultima sort of, you know, homage. But D&D 1 was like an Ultima 3 homage. Final Fantasy 2 was a bit more of an Ultima 4-5 homage, and that was a lot more involved with having the highlighted words that you could, you know, remember and type in and get new keywords out of. And they had a simplified interface, of course, but
yeah, that was cool. You know, it gives you a little bit more reason to talk to people around town.
Yeah.
It makes me think of, and I was trying to play Elder Scrolls Oblivion, and I got that one skill where you can, like, charm people with talking to them. It's supposed to make them like you. And now I just made everybody hate me. And they all, like, attacked me. And I'm like, this is the worst skill ever. Why did I choose this?
You're just doing it wrong.
I guess so.
I'm seriously, like,
by definition.
Yeah. You can literally make people in that game love you unconditionally.
No. Everybody in that game hated me unconditionally because I tried using that on them. I don't know how I did it, but everybody ended up hating me. And I'm like, how do I even
okay, granted, I will admit that that minigame is non-intuitive until you realize what the catch is.
And you can exploit the hell out of it.
Click, click, click. Yeah. But yeah,
especially as it levels up and you can take a free spin of it.
Yeah.
You can rotate it one without actually clicking on it.
I don't think I ever did that. I used that game a lot too, and I don't think I ever did the option of free spin.
You have to get up to like a journeyman of speechcraft or something.
Oh, okay. Well then,
that would be an interesting thought to see Final Fantasy Square try to make a more open world sort of Elder Scrolls-esque Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I actually thought you were just going to say dialogue trees, but that would be different too.
Yeah, no, well, the dialogue trees would be the first step, and that would be an interesting thing to actually have something that, well, granted, I mean, even Skyrim and, all that is still sort of the illusion.
They don't really have dialogue trees. It's not like Baldur's Gate or...
And then you can steal people's chocobos and they'll try to attack you when you steal their chocobo.
Or Grand Theft Chocobo.
Well, that's another thing that happened to me when I was playing Oblivion. I guess I grabbed somebody's horse and they attacked me and they followed me forever. And I'm like, I didn't even know it was your horse, sorry. Do that with a chocobo. Or if you like something attacks you and you're fighting it and you accidentally hit your chocobo attacks you.
Oh, I hate
that. Happened to me in Oblivion.
I had stuff like that all the time.
Accidentally hit my horse. My horse tried to kill me.
I guess their closest attempts to open world are doing MMOs, but kind of taking us back to, what they're going to do with, being retro, sort of, or I'm not really interested in MMOs anyway, and we, talk of mistakes Wada might have made, the whole outsourcing 14 to China thing.
Yeah.
But I really like how much Naoki Yoshida is putting into redoing 14. Like, everything they've released about it has been really, tugging on some nostalgic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had the Magitek armor in the one. I remember all the screenshots had all their characters were named after FF characters. Like, they had the Dragoon was named Kane Highwind and
mm-hmm.
all that stuff. And it does look very cool. Like, the graphics looks very nice.
Did they take it back into Square Enix, or is it still all outsourced?
No. It's Naoki Yoshida did... I'm trying to remember what he did. Do you know Ryu? He did some other stuff. And they just kind of... They threw this mess of a game at him and say, here, fix it. Like, I don't envy him, but he really made the most of it. I give him a lot of respect for it. I signed up for the beta because I figured what the hell, but I didn't get in yet.
Yeah, I've never gone for MMOs.
Yeah, I don't really
I don't understand why they have to make the MMOs be, like, numbered FF titles. Like,
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It should be FF online.
I mean, maybe because I understand it's a marketing thing, but then there's an OCD part of my brain that's like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Back in 14, back for 11, they said it was because it, showed that they were committed to making it as good as a normal title, but that kind of went out the window with 14.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Because 11 really was, I don't like MMOs, but 11 really was successful. It was the biggest one until WoW came out, and it's still... I mean, it's one of the few that haven't gone free-to-play, and people are still playing it.
Yeah, and they have made a lot of money out of it.
So they really did, have a success with it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been debating giving it a try because, as you know, I used to play World of Warcraft a lot. But then I really lost interest in it when Cataclysm came out, because I thought Cataclysm was boring, and Deathwing was like... a horrible villain. He's boring. So honestly, it's like I stopped playing. I haven't played it in a long time. And so I was thinking, maybe I should give 11 a try. But then I was like, how many people even still play that game? Is it worth it to try to get into it now?
There are a fair amount, but they're all super high level, I guess. But I got a month free trial like 3 or 4 years ago. I only played it about a week. It's really grindy. And I mean, maybe that's just an MMO thing.
It's just an MMO thing. World of Warcraft is
I got sick of fighting the same frickin' rabbit that was just as capable of killing me when I was done grinding as it was when I started.
Honestly, I mean, that's the way WoW was too. It's like, okay, go into this cave and collect 10 of this. Okay, now go back into the cave and get 20 of this. No, now you have to go back to that same cave and get this stuff now too.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, it's MMOs are like going to work. I don't understand why they're so.
I like MMOs because I like the social aspect. I like being able to run into like random people and be annoying. Like, that's a real person. Like, I joined I had this guild on World of Warcraft that I joined, and we're all off a Facebook group. And even though I don't play anymore, I'm still in the Facebook group, and I kind of like chat with them over Facebook sometimes because they're cool people. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I like MMOs. And that's why, even though World of Warcraft, I thought they came. And maybe people say Mists of Pandaria is really cool, so maybe I should give that a try. But
No!
I don't know. People in my guild are all like, you should come back. Mists of Pandaria is good. And I'm like, okay, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but crackheads also think that you should try crack, so.
I mean, Blizzard sent me an email the other day. It's like, oh, play WoW for free for 7 days. And I'm all like, maybe. If it's free.
Also, the guy, Yoshida, who's working on the remake of 14, he was responsible for Dragon Quest X and several other Dragon Quest games.
That's what he did.
And Bomberman games, which were interesting to realize. But yes, Super Bomberman 1 through 3, Bomberman 64, World Hero, Second Attack, and Tournament. And then Dragon Quest, then apparently nothing for several years, and then Dragon Quest Monster Battle ruled as...
Interesting that he's so good at hitting all the FF nostalgia strings. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just like seeing a Magitek armor in good graphics. It looked awesome.
Maybe he was a fanboy who got a job with Square Enix.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah.
And now he's exploiting it. He's all like, yes.
Well, I mean, I assume that most of the lower people that work at Square grew up as fans, so when the last
this guy is only 39, so
right when this whole generation moves out, you know, Kitase and all them, it's going to be fans running it. I guess you hope they're fans like us.
We're going to make things awesome.
Yeah, smart fans.
Well, they need to hire Trays as like a continuity manager.
There we go. Perfect.
Trays can handle continuity. I can tell them how to write a goddamn story, you know.
He needs to start learning Japanese.
He kind of does. I don't know if he speaks it. He can read it.
Yeah, I mean, he can read it, but can he, like, walk into, like, Square Enix corporate offices and start bossing people around?
I haven't got that.
But he speaks angry well enough that he could do that.
We should be talking about the podcast. He's going to be like, you bitches.
No. Okay, hold on. We can make this up. Trace, you're a sexy man. All is forgiven.
He's a really good kisser.
We all know.
And now we can talk shit about him all day long and he won't
care. Yeah.
He doesn't care. But, so, on the topic of continuity manager, we'll go to our last topic here.
If Square Enix were to remake Final Fantasy VII, how would you go about it? Or how do you think they should go about it? And are there things you should change or be left out?
What else would we talk about on our first spot here?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's...
I actually think if they're going to remake FF7, they need to... I mean, they can't keep it exactly as it was.
Mm.
Just because people are going to demand, you know, up-res, new graphics, everything. And that's going to make a subtle change in tone. Because there are certain things that you can do with the SD graphics that look really weird in high HD. But what I do think they can do is basically use 10.2 as their template.
Mm-hmm.
And 10.2 and 13.2, because those do a fairly good job of striking the balance between, yes, we are a serious story with serious people, and did you see what they did?
Mm.
That was so silly.
Yeah.
But you believe it!
Yeah, I mean, people are always seem the most concerned about the whole honeybee in sequence.
Oh, that? But, no, dude, they can fucking keep that easy. No, that's
I know. Well, I mean, the big communal shower sequence they could literally leave, you know, have the camera pan up so you only see cloud spikes, and you don't really have to change much of anything.
Well, that's the way it is in the hot tub anyways. All you see, if you see like the big muscly guys, and all you see is Cloud's little spike coming out of the hot tub.
That's what I mean. They could just, they don't even have to change that.
Yeah. No, that's not even the part that I'm talking about. That you can do in, like, you could do that with real life actors, and
it would be silly.
It would be silly, but it would also be entirely believable. What I'm talking about is some of the more slapstick stuff, like, you know, when people get bowled over and spun around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's to do with the animation and stuff like that. I think with subtle animation, they could do more sort of interesting things, or you wouldn't have, like, Johnny crawling across the floor.
Yeah, that stuff was kind of holdovers from when it was 2D, where you had to have all the sprites basically overact to get their point across of what was happening. Like, people jump 20 feet in the air when they're surprised and stuff, because they had to show that they were surprised.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that you can do, you know, an up-res of an old-school game into, well, not HD with the FF3 remakes, but at least 3D. And, you know, even give it voice acting, and it can be done well and believably, even if it's not, you know, perfect graphics.
Mm.
And so I know everybody's going to demand that it's, you know, graphically perfect, you know, everybody looks exactly like they're real sort of thing. But I actually think that Square should, I think for the, like, the FMVs, it would be perfectly fine if they wanted to go that way. But I almost want to suggest that they go slightly cartoony for the regular battle, you know, world and battle models.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one thing about, like, you know, the compilation that I guess I kind of sort of like some of the things they did with the compilation, but at the same time, a part of me wishes that they hadn't strayed so far away from, like, the anime look that the original game had. Because even if better graphics, I kind of feel like they're making a remake be a lot more hard, like, more difficult to pull off, because I feel like they could still keep a lot of the same stuff they had in the original game if they kept, like, the same anime type of a style, but since they tried to make it more realistic, they're going to have to, like, change a lot and cut out a lot that was in the original game. And there's a guy, like, and a lot of games are not, like, a lot of fans out there who probably won't understand, like, their favorite part may have had to be cut because it's just not going to work. It's going to be stupid now. Even though beforehand it might have been cute, you know?
Yeah, like, as far as where, like, the model design goes, I'd actually take Xenosaga as sort of my, not exactly my baseline, but the sort of thing, the blend looking real and looking cartoony.
Yeah, they're very anime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of just, real quick, the slapstick working with semi-realistic graphics, look at a Crisis Core's Monster Summons. Zach with Cactuar. Zach with Chocobo. Zach with the Tonberry one's hilarious. I love the Tonberry one. Mm-hmm. Cactuar one's pretty funny, too. Mm-hmm.
That was working. That was cute. And maybe that's because it was Zach.
Yeah.
I could imagine Zach dancing with a Cactuar.
Well, yeah, but there you go. I mean, that shows them doing cute stuff with the more realistic graphics.
Right.
But something like
13 had fun with the Tonberry thing, too.
Yeah.
But the question is, like, with something like, say, the dolphin minigame, can you take, like, an Advent Children Cloud and have a dolphin, you know, fly him up?
I always thought that part was kind of stupid in the original one, to be honest. But,
well, I thought it was dumb because I could never get it right.
And then, I had to, like, look up a cheat for that. It's like, oh, don't move your character. Just push the button twice exactly where you start from. And I'm like, that's so dumb. Why does the game give you the option to move if you're not supposed to move?
Yeah, it's the, that's actually a good one. That's one I hadn't really thought about.
Like, I kind of feel like if they're going to remake the game, and they probably have to do the same art style as the rest of the compilation to make it fit, I kind of feel like the Dolphin minigame
and Crisis Core look very different from one another.
Yeah.
They're not that different to the point where, I mean,
their art
still
style
kind of
is different, but yes, they're very realistically portioned.
That's what I mean. Like, I mean, you don't have anime, like, one realistic and one anime. Like, I kind of feel like the dolphin minigame is one thing that would have to be cut. Like, you can still have a dolphin there, but don't have Cloud ride it up the tower.
20, Because it can 30 feet have, in the air.
Yeah, I don't have the dolphin jump like 100 feet in the air to get Cloud up the tower, you know, so it's not electrocuted. Yeah,
that's a decent point, I suppose. I'll try it. What other...
You could do it, but you'd have to let, you know, hang that lampshade. You know, yeah. That lantern, just to go... You know, literally have somebody express disbelief at the dolphin being able to do it. And just let it stand.
I mean, Barret's the one standing there, usually, and Barret, if anyone can pull a lampshade on something...
How the fuck can that dolphin live that grown-ass man fucking here?
And, you know, and it would be... It would be a good chance for them to, you know, reintroduce Cloud's goofy side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he was goofy by the time.
In Advent Children, he gets thrown into the air by...
Barret,
yeah. So... Sure, dolphin.
That's different, though. I just kind of feel like a dolphin doing it.
It's a super dolphin.
And I just think that, no. I mean, and even the part being thrown up by all the people I thought was kind of cheeseball and Advent Children, but I was willing to let it slide. But
it was symbolism. But anyway.
Exactly. But although, I don't think a dolphin would work.
But would it be that hard to just make the tower shorter? Just make the scene identical, but the dolphin only... pits him out of the water, like, you know, 20 feet instead of a million.
Yeah.
Or like, maybe
that's reasonable. There's trick dolphins that do that.
Or get rid of the stuff that would electrocute him so he can just swim up to the tower and climb up.
Well, no, but that cuts it completely. Electrical, but the tower's shorter, and then you bump the dolphin up. And it's the dolphin doesn't shoot him into the air, he just, like, stands on the dolphin's nose or something.
Yeah, like...
There you go.
You can keep the dolphin, have the dolphin give him a necessary boost, but it's something that is not egregious, you know, like, dolphin flies in the air, does 18 backflips, and shoot a laser out its ass.
Yeah, I mean, that's not really cutting things. So, yeah, I still maintain it's completely doable. I mean, when people talk about the compilation stuff, I've said before, don't change anything about the original story, mm-hmm. because the compilation is supposed to fit that. But if you want optional optional dungeons, you know, put in Modeoheim, put in all kinds of optional stuff that you can go find,
right.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic. Just leave the original plot the same.
Compilation that doesn't affect the plot would be a great thing. Let's build that world. Make it as big of a world as we can. Like, increase the size of town. They don't even have to be with, like, NPCs you can interact with. Give us shit we can see. Make us feel how big Midgar really is.
Look at Rabanaster in FF12. You can't talk to absolutely every person in that town, but that town feels enormous.
I loved it. So much... 12 gets so much hate, but I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like 12.
And that's another thing I think they could certainly get away with keeping is not a free roaming camera. You could have it sometimes, like a world map or whatever.
Yeah,
but
I definitely
not always have
is a limited control camera.
Right, still so that they can frame the scenes the way they wanted to frame them and not necessarily make everything...
A little bit of wiggle room.
Right, they talk about the slums feeling less oppressive in Crisis Core because you can move the camera around, whereas 7 had that, you know, close-to-the-ground, top-down view. Well, keep that view and make the player not be able to move it when they're in the slums.
Yeah, have it be fixed, slightly unnatural, at Dutch angles. That would really a lot of way to...
I mean, FF10 did that. FF10's camera just moves the way they wanted it to, and it worked pretty well.
Actually, when I played FF10, I found myself always wanting to be able to rotate the camera. I'm all like, why can I not rotate my camera in this game? Bastards.
Why?
I don't know.
You want to rotate it to Z? I mean, that game was so linear, there was nowhere else to go.
I don't care. I like being able to rotate the camera in games. I just do. I like being able to look around and see everything and
I don't, it's fine with if they do it sometimes, but like if you want to capture that because you know people complain that the slums weren't oppressive in Crisis Core, well that's because you could see the sky because you could look around. If you twirled the camera around, you could look to the outside of Midgar.
That's true. I mean, like, it would,
it also didn't, I mean, part of it was, one, even if you couldn't have turned it around, you know, the standard look was from a wide-angle shot behind Zack, which they gave you because that was how it was pretty much everywhere else. If they had actually changed it up from the rest of the game, not only would it have, you know, increased the effect of the slums, but it really would have just sort of, you know, it would have given you a nonverbal clue that things are different down here. This is not how Zack knows shit. And it, you know, give you a short but easily overcome, you know, little hurdle to adjusting, which would, you know, basically work in, you know, gameplay into plot with Zack going, what the hell's going on around here? I'm a fish out of water.
And the other, like the old PlayStation games have those, the pre-rendered backgrounds. I mean, they mean you can't move the camera. Mm-hmm. But they all have all that super detailed, weird little stuff.
Yeah.
Like every, in our other commentaries, we joke about detailed drawings of trash in the slums. Crisis Core couldn't do that because they couldn't render all that, so it was just kind of nondescript piles.
Right.
But, I mean, look at a game like Uncharted. In current, they can render all that in real time if they want to now.
Mm-hmm. But even in Crisis Core, they didn't just... Like, they sort of opened up, like, Nibelheim, you sort of go off one screen through a canyon, and then you go up to the mansion. It seemed a bit kind of weird. It didn't seem like the original Nibelheim.
It wasn't all that connected.
Yeah.
It didn't feel
the same.
I mean, and I sort of see what they were trying to do there. And I like the idea that they were trying to expand Nibelheim, make it seem more open.
Like a town.
But also, yeah. I think it worked there, or what they were trying would have worked there had they done it better.
I love what Dirge of Cerberus did to Calm.
Yeah.
I really like the look of Calm.
Yeah.
Dirge. Like, it's still like a really big town. It's just really dwarfed but next to Midgar.
Yeah.
And I always liked how Calm was kind of European looking.
Right. And they kept all that.
Yeah.
But in 7, Calm was one little town square.
Yeah. And in Dirge of Cerberus, we saw that one little town square.
Right, we did.
But there's, like, stuff beyond it.
Yeah, and that's...
And quite a bit, because it's right next to Midgar, so a big city would still look small.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's doable.
Yeah, it's totally doable. They just...
Yes, they could screw it up. I don't buy that it would ruin the original. I'd just go play the original.
How exactly do you guys think we would have to handle, like, I feel like a lot of it would have to be changed to Gold Saucer in a remake to make it work. I just kind of feel like it's just like a weird placement, and it's just like this big, tall skyscraper of an amusement park, and the gondola is just everywhere. Like, the track doesn't even make sense. It's just kind of like floating there in the air.
Yeah.
Well, I guess
so you're talking specifically about the physicality of the
physicality, software. Yeah. Like,
fact that there's an arcade.
Yeah.
No, I think you'd have to like redesign the Gold Saucer. Like,
that's fine by me. That's not a deal breaker. I do like the idea that it was, and what I think they should do with it is make it more concrete about whether or not it was actually built. You know, like where the hell. How the hell it and North Coral relate to each other?
Yeah, because they're real far apart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would just say, make it a little closer, if nothing else.
Yeah. You know, redo the design a bit. Definitely have, you know, like, have Barrett go, what the hell is this shit?
Yes, he does seem rather, I mean, yeah, I don't know, how old is Gold Saucer? How long has it been there?
5 years. It's built over his old hometown. Quite
right, long. I know, and he seems completely nonplussed by that. So, does he know about it already? I guess.
Yeah. So, there's some things you have to just have him go. Yeah. So we knew about this, and we didn't think it was a big deal, or what the hell is going on here? You know, you have to call attention to it, even if it's just to dismiss it. But yeah, sort of get a more coherent, you know, plan for the Gold Saucer. That's really just map making, you know.
Yeah.
That's not you can keep everything that's actually in Gold Saucer.
Exactly.
Yeah, you could still get around by those silly tubes.
Yeah. a lot of people think that, you know, Gold Saucer is a complete departure from the tone of the game, and in a way it is, but that's only because you're actually seeing the wine and circus that Shinra has been using to mollify the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You've
been under the wine and circus the entire time. Now you're in the thick of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, because you were never, you know, up on the plate, you were never in, well, you were very briefly in Junon, you know, seeing
the upper world, yeah,
the
much.
Good stuff there. But, you know, right there, you're in the, right in the middle of, yes, this is everything that Shinra can do for you. Because while Dio is, you know, aha, I'm the guy who did this, it's got so much, you know, Shinra fingers in the, you know, pot, it's undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They're the only people with enough money and manpower to have built that thing in under 5 years.
But, mm-hmm. So, I don't think you have to change anything substantial. There might be superficial changes that would be prudent.
Yeah, I just like feel like I really think they would need to redesign it, but a lot of people would be like, no, they changed the way it looked. It's like, no, it needed to change.
Yeah.
Have someone tell Zach's parents what happened to him.
Yeah.
I'd add that.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. And how about can we go back and have a little bit more revisiting of Elmira? And like, I kind of feel like she's like the woman who raised Aerith, and she just kind of gets pushed to the side. Like,
El who?
Nobody remembers that she exists in like the end of the game or the compilation.
Yeah,
it's like,
I mean, they mention her in one of the in case of one of them. So Majima kind of remembers her. So that's good.
Yeah.
I guess so. One thing I hope they do, though, speaking, you know, going back to Gold Saucer, is I think that they should make it a little easier to get a date with someone other than Aerith or Tifa, and I think they should put in more dates, like date the entire party.
Just turn it into Mass Effect. Make it so you can date absolutely everyone.
Like, I want
for
to
a walk with me?
I want to
see what are you talking about, Red? No.
Red
need to go
date.
For a walk.
Oh, boy.
Bob, do you want to go for a walk? What do you want to talk about? No, I need to go for a walk. Okay, that was cute with Red, but no.
More dates, date everybody.
Yes.
How does
that
the
is my verdict.
Game bicycle?
Yes. Including a date with Ketchy and one with a Moogle.
Separately.
Yes.
Not
one. Although that'd be kind of tough since the date ends with you finding him stealing.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to go on a date with him.
So you go on a date?
Because he needs to be able to steal the keystone. And if you're on a date with him, you can't do that. So plot-wise...
Whichever one you're not dating, the cat or the Moogle.
Yeah. You can take the Moogle.
In a new game plus, you can start going on dates with people who don't make any sense.
Yeah.
There you go.
Just Zach and Sephiroth and Zang.
Random people from Gold Saucer show up at your door. Want to go on a date?
Dio calling the boy the whole time.
Shows back up. Bobby!
There you go. That would be perfect. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. We should do that. Mookie could be at Gold Saucer.
Could
show up. Mookie shows up randomly. Oh, hey.
In the original game, does he ever leave Costa del Sol?
I think
he goes to Icicle Inn at some point to go snowboard.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Oh, yeah.
Is he still on that Speedo in Icicle Inn?
That would be the best if he was.
I love when you run into him, Costa del Sol. He's like, I love it here. You can walk around half naked and no one cares.
Yes, more Mookie just throughout the entire game.
Yeah.
And then Johnny, too. I want a Johnny date.
Oh, boy.
He's like freaking out, like, who are you? Who am I? How do I remember
just
you?
Just turn it into opposite Melon's comment. Mm-hmm. Comment is
what you say. Yeah, basically.
There you go.
That would work.
That would be hilarious. There we go. That would automatically make every remake needs to happen now just for that more date.
Do you think it is in the works? Do you think they're
probably
just
not
doing it
no
on the side?
I do think it'll happen someday. I don't think it's a matter of if, but when. Oh, yeah,
I don't
someday.
Think there's
like,
seriously development, but they are probably kicking around ideas. There's there's a whiteboard with string all over it.
Well.
Somewhere. Square Enix.
But yeah, I mean, when eventually 7 will become the new FF4.
Let's see, that's 4 or 5 releases from now.
But who knows
how long. At least get the 2 collections, which make the after years a coherent, playable story.
Yeah.
And those are a long time coming. And yeah, for all the terrible shit the compilation has done, the after years. The after years. Mm-hmm. So much promise, so much failure.
Yep, I'll take the compilation.
Yeah.
You know what would be nice? If there was post-game content of, like, the On the Way to a Smile recreated just with the graphics from Final Fantasy VII, like the Final Fantasy remake. If they did that, or DLC, like,
yeah, I episodes. Yuffie's especially has, like, gameplay in it.
Yeah.
It has a dungeon, it has random encounters.
Yuffie and Barrett's, and possibly Shinra, could be made into proper, well, and actually Red's, too.
Yeah, they're all out in the, yeah, there's, could be combat. Tifa's would pretty much be a cutscene.
Yeah.
Unless you have Cloud make a delivery.
Just, like, have them all be, like, unlockable things, or maybe a one downloadable DLC for, like, $10 for all of the cases.
Yeah, right.
No. I'm not saying it's believable. I'm saying what they should do. Not what they
That would be cool.
They should.
Like I said, tie it as much to the compilation as you can in optional content.
Right.
Yeah. And possibly take pains to unfuck up some of the compilation fuck ups.
Yes. But even then,
like,
optional gun.
Can we retcon Deep Ground?
That'd be tough. You could do that in a sequel.
Yeah.
Retcon it being so freaking huge.
Because Deep Ground shouldn't appear in 7 in any way, shape, or form. Unless the only thing I could possibly think of even having a reference is in that little Shinra Library minigame in Shinra Tower, you could find some book that maybe says something suspicious about it. I couldn't
somewhere
see any more than that.
The Nibelheim Mansion. And should only be an offhand reference.
Yeah, just like a book or a journal or something. But no quests, nothing.
Right.
And I agree. Deep Ground desperately needs retconning. If I ever actually get back to the FF7 Dirge of Cerberus LP, oh god, does it need retconning?
It's too big.
That's all you have to do. Wow.
Damn it.
I'm glad the girls
feel like that. No.
Now it's out of context theater.
It was just too big.
Pixel,
I mean, they
edit that out,
like,
and just make that how our podcast starts.
Yeah, no.
The way she said it and everything.
Yeah.
You're welcome, too.
Yeah, no, because, I mean, I understand that they needed an excuse to have hordes and hordes and waves of faceless enemies.
Yeah, you need moops.
We have robots, we have cloning, they literally could be brainwashed, you know, captured people. Mm-hmm. You know, hell, make it like a thing where halfway through the game there's a part where you have to get through without killing people, you know?
That would have been cool.
It's all the citizens of Edge just marching at you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like, they made like 1,200 people in Junon just, like, disappear, and nobody, like, knew.
Well,
like,
Junon's supposed to be pretty damn big.
But even still, 1,200 people vanishing?
Yeah, I know, but it's how many people live in Junon? A couple million?
I still think it's kind of a
stir. No, yeah, it would cause a stir.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm just saying, it's not like there's, you know, 3,000 people in the town and half of them are gone.
But I still think it's just like they're able to just like grab that many people that quickly. It's like Deep Ground is too big for it to fit in FF7's world the way it did. Like, to be completely hidden, nobody knew it was there, it was all underground.
Right, yeah. Well, nobody's arguing that at all.
Well,
if we turn this this particular podcast into the problems of Dirge of Cerberus, we will be here for another 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah. The tech level as well in Dirge of Cerberus is completely different than the tech level in Final Fantasy VII. Like, they have flying things.
That's another thing. I felt like in
No, that'll be another podcast. Do a Dirge of Cerberus podcast.
Yeah.
Though I actually do think that they should go up and, like, up tech res. You know, not actually increase the tech, but increase sort of the techie look. Mm-hmm. Not in the slums, but in the, you know, the wine and circus and the good parts. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, all of the amazing technology Shinra does have, it seems a bit more, you know, believable that they have it and they're just holding out on other people.
There you go. Now we're back to the remake.
Yeah. Because they do have tons of amazing, amazing, ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, the only thing they seem to lack is fast flight.
Yeah.
Because they only have helicopters.
Yeah.
And the big Gelnica. And that one singular airship.
Yeah.
So they seem to have all this very high-tech stuff, but flight has eluded them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there was always kind of anachronistic like that. Some ways it was more technology than we have, but on the other hand, they'd never been to space. So right.
Well, I think it was because, like, Mako had just been discovered sort of, like, well, not a few years ago, but it was at a time where the tech level wasn't very high. It was sort of steampunk kind of thing. And then Mako sort of propelled them into new technologies and everything, but they still hadn't really finished.
The paradigm shift, to reference 13 again.
I definitely think that the FF7 remake, when it happens, can be done faithfully, even if they change some things to make it, you know, fit better.
Yeah.
With its own story, you know, not limited by their technology.
Mm-hmm. So let it be written, so let it be done.
Yeah.
TLS has determined
it.
They can do it.
Thus it is true, and none shall oppose it.
There you go.
Cue the thousands of comments.
Yeah.
You wish.
Hey, if I can get thousands of comments by being an asshole, I will be an asshole.
We're going to get so much hate mail now.
Yeah.
It's okay, it'll be balanced out by everyone saying how hot Kenny's voice sounds.
Oh, I remember.
Especially
that.
With her new sound bite.
It's my new sound
bite. I'm going to put that right at the end of the podcast. Oh, wait, I'll get it. Hey, Kenny, look at this.
It's too big.
Just think of the fun you can have with the editing.
Wonderful.
Oh, God.
I can't wait. I need to hear.
Oh my goodness, and there's nothing I can do to stop this, is it?
Nope.
It'll be the Spirits Within commentary all over again.
Oh wow.
On that note, I think we should leave it there.
Yep.
We'll lead out with another piece of music. This is The Maiden Who Travels the Planet by Hypochondriac Piano. This was the first piece of music that was ever written for the audiobooks. Originally, I was going to go for a Brian Eno kind of score for The Maiden Who Travels the Planet, but then I found Hypochondriac Piano and decided to turn it into like a completely piano-based. This is a composition of Earth's theme.
Arrangement,
yeah. The original version of this that was used in The Maiden Who Travels the Planet was sort of cut off before it gets to the main part of Earth's theme, but this is a rewritten version for the album Pulse of Life. So enjoy, and we'll see you next time.
Later, taters.
Bye.
Love to your mothers.
It's too big.